If you passed $50 on the ground, would you pick it up? Yes. So this is an easy thing to do.
Run your home and your dough like a biblical boss. Hello, biblical bosses. Welcome to Abraham's Wallet. I'm Steve. I'm here with Mark as usual. And we have a special guest here as we're looking at the year end. It's Jedediah. Jed.
Hello, everyone.
How are you today?
I'm doing really well.
Jed is coming to us just from up the street, like right over that way, up in Columbus, Ohio. Well, Dublin, Ohio. And so I know Dublin as the home of Wendy's.
True. Yes, that's actually right down the street from us, from my office.
And then I also know Dublin as the home of the Columbus Zoo. So I grew up in an age when Jack Hanna was always on The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson. So in my mind, growing up in Houston, Texas, I just assumed that the Columbus Zoo is the greatest zoo the world has ever known because Jack Hanna, you'd have to be the greatest zoo because it's got Jack Hanna and Jack Hanna's on The Tonight Show. So do you know Jack Hanna and have you visited the Columbus Zoo?
I do. I have met Jack Hanna a few times.
No, you have not.
I have. I have. Actually, one day at my previous office, he was wandering around our property.
No, he was not.
This is God's honest truth.
Did he have a kangaroo in his arms?
Unfortunately, he did not. He did not. But he did have a vest on. And so and that's kind of how I figured out it was him. And so he knocks on our door and he says, hey, I'm looking for so-and-so. And then we're like, oh, okay, hey, it's right up the way. And so then he went about his way. And I'm like, that was Jack Hanna. So wow. Now he probably does not remember the interaction as much as I do. So if you ever talk to him, don't be like, hey, you remember that time?
Oh, right. You know Jedediah, right?
That's right. Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and as far as being to the zoo, yes, we've been many, many times. My children are old enough now that they both were employed by Zumbizi Bay this last year. They did their work there and made some money. So yes, we're Lovely. Very familiar with the zoo.
Lovely. The reason Jed is with us today, Mark, if you didn't know, is because we want to talk about year end. If you're running your dough like a biblical boss, then year end means something because you got some stuff to clean up and to organize before midnight on December 31st. Jed, this is your world, right? What is your world?
Yeah, no, my world is tax and tax planning.
Nice.
Yeah, so we focus on taxes and how to maximize wealth preservation and wealth growth in a tax efficient way.
Nice. And you enjoy doing that because I like to avoid that subject as much.
I do.
As
it's
possible.
It's like a big game. Right. Okay. I love games. I love rules. I have been known to read in detail the instructions for any game, whether it's a card game, board game, whatever game we're playing, because how else are you supposed to know how to make those work for your favor?
Amen.
If you don't read them. So it drives my wife absolutely bananas. She requires that I do it at least 24 hours advance before we play so that I'm not, you know, having to then explain it.
Obsessed.
Yeah, correct. She's like, just give me the high level. I'm like, okay, here's what you do. I'm going to absolutely destroy you.
I have to throw in an editorial here and say, I totally believe that the best tax people are technicians, so they know all of the specifics, and there's a little bit of that video game attitude, which is there's a way to beat this thing because the complex and voluminous tax code is written in a way where the government will reward this behavior, they will penalize this behavior. Can you navigate this thing to your greatest personal advantage? That's the way it's supposed to work.
Yeah, it's a big game, and they make the rules and they like to change the rules. And hey, this isn't, we don't like what people are doing over here. And so we're going to change these rules and try to make it harder. And then really I just challenge accepted. That's kind of how I look at it. Because then it's like, oh yeah, well, I'm going to use this over here and we're going to do the exact same thing. And it's still legal.
Yeah. I have a spell. That's what I'm pulling out in the video game.
That's
right. You
didn't
know that I had this, but you gave this to me. It was a tax credit.
That's correct.
From Q2 of last year.
That's right.
Okay. I'm very happy to have you two brains here. I'm going to recede into the background right after I introduce the first thing I want us to talk about, which is year-end giving. And Jed, I'm going to use you first as an example, and I'll tell you why. I'm going to go very personal.
Please.
We'll cut this out if you're uncomfortable with it. But
yeah.
I want to use you as an example because as a shrewd giver, because back in the day, you were one of the first people to donate and support Abraham's Wallet.
Oh,
ding.
Wow.
Thank you for that.
Absolutely. My pleasure.
And I've noticed that since then, you've changed your strategy. And you, as of, I think, 2 days ago, I'm revealing this live.
Yeah, you
on
are.
Air right now. You, via Wealthstone Tax Advisors, have become Abraham's Wallet first end of year charitable contributor. We received your little official check with the tear off things. So thank you for helping us reach families and help them become biblical bosses.
Yeah.
We really appreciate that. We need more people like you.
What's the donation level where you get to be a guest on the show?
It's significant.
Okay.
It's like give a significant amount of money and then be a total expert in your financial field. Those are
okay.
You hit those two, that really helps. So once upon a time you donated to us personally. Now you give through your business. What's the strategy there for people who don't know what you're doing?
The reason why I do that is not because the deductibility of it is the same. Because I'm a pass-through entity. That does not reduce my ordinary income when it comes to my business.
That means that what the business makes is the same thing as you making it.
It flows right. The business does not pay any taxes. It flows right to my personal return. And the charitable portion actually ends up being on a different line and gets treated just as if I had made the deduction personally. The reason why I do it is because one of the things I have to do as an S corp is I have to have a reasonable wage. Okay. As a business owner, as working in the business, being an employee, I have to have a reasonable wage. And in order to take the advantages of an S corp, I want my reasonable wage to be as low as possible, but it also has to be reasonable. Well, one of the ways I can do that is reduce the income of the business because I base my salary based on the income of the business.
Right.
And so if my charity comes out of there, right? So for instance, let's just say my methodology is the bottom line of the business makes $500,000 and I'm going to pay myself 50% of that as a wage and 50% as distributions. So 250, yep. 250. Okay. However, if I can take that $500,000 and make it $400,000 by doing $100,000 of charitable contributions that I would do anyways, whether I was going to do it out of my personal or out of my business, now my reasonable wage is $200,000. And so that $50,000, I'm saving Social Security and Medicare tax on.
And from Abraham's Wallet, we're happy to get that $100,000. We don't care whether it comes from you or your business. We just appreciate the $100,000.
Eventually, when I retire and I have oodles of money, generational wealth, and am going to have RMDs, required minimum distributions, I am going to do my charitable contributions through a QCD. And that is a qualified charitable donation. And so I'm going to do it directly from my retirement account to Abraham's Wallet. That way, I don't even have to pick it up as income. So it depends on what stage of life you're in of how you should be giving. So those of you out there that might be in that retirement piece and have RMDs and that sort of stuff, great time to do year-end giving to Abraham's Wallet or, you know, whatever. And but do it through the QCD directly from there. And it keeps your AGI down. Keeps taxes down, and it satisfies the RMD.
Can I throw in one more life stage / wealth stage tip, which we've talked about before, but if you are, let's say you don't own a business, you're an employee, but you make good money, and you've been a diligent saver and investor, and you've got a big taxable investment account. I did a charitable contribution on behalf of a client the other day where they wanted to give a relatively modest amount of money. I mean, for them, it would be a huge gift for a lot of people. But I said, wait a second, don't give cash. Let me just check your investment account and see if we can give some stocks that you bought a long time ago that have grown in value. Well, these shrewd investors whose investments were all managed by yours truly. So I guess the shrewdness also, I'll take a little credit for the shrewdness. They had a particular tech stock that had increased in value 890% since it was purchased. So instead of giving their gift in cash, I said, take that cash. We still want to own this tech stock. You're going to just rebuy it with that cash, and you're going to hand over the tech stock to the charity. The charity doesn't have to pay taxes on it. And now you've saved all the capital gains tax that someday you are going to have to pay on that tech stock, unless by some miracle it continued to grow and you passed it on to your kids after death. Very unlikely with that particular stock. So it was a win-win. So if that's you, if you've held a stock for more than a year and it's appreciated substantially, then you have an opportunity to give stock. It's why Abraham's Wallet set up a brokerage account to receive those types of gifts. Some people will donate stock directly to a charity. We can accept those. Your church can often accept those. Some people, maybe you go to a really small church and they're like, we're not setting up no brokerage account. Well, you can give to a donor advised fund and have that fund send a check straight to whoever you want, as long as they're a charitable organization. So just another little tip on the year-end giving.
So just to set up the topic a little bit better, year-end giving is a big deal for nonprofits, charitable organizations, because I remember when I worked for a church, I remember being told they're given as much in the month of December as in the other 11 months put together. So I guess what that means is people wait till the end of the year to see what bonuses are we going to get? What kind of money did we actually make for the year? And then they're going to take a percentage of that and go, that's going to be our charitable giving. That certainly works in some degree. I think we give throughout the year, but in my family with my wife's event planning business, et cetera, we don't know how much money we're going to make in February. We just don't know what the year is going to be. We can take guesses, but we don't really know until like mid-November what we're actually going to make. So then when you actually know that number, then you start, you realize, if you don't know this, if you're young and starting to do your taxes for the first time, when you give to 501c3 charitable organizations, that giving is the same money as paying your taxes. You get a deduction. You can tell us more about this, Jed, but for giving in general. So Mark, I want you to kind of just field from a Abrahamic standpoint about charitable giving in general and how the year-end giving plays into a biblical family strategy.
Yeah, I always encourage, it's a part of the review we just did with all of our clients, is we talk about giving and just a couple things. I would say almost everyone that we work with on financial planning has some stated goal to be a generous giving family. It's really helpful to then show them their tax return and say, well, your tax return says you give 1.5% of your income. Now, I do have occasionally a family that goes, that's true, because look at this list, and they show me all the gifts they've done that aren't tax deductible. And to those sure. people, I say, number one, never let tax code determine your obedience to the Lord.
Ooh,
so snap. I'm not interested in saying, well, don't give to that widow in need because you're not getting a tax deduction. Number two, our family a couple of years ago wanted to make a substantial gift to a person in need. But it was enough money that I was thinking, now this person attends a local church that's not my own. And I called them up and I said, do you guys do a benevolence fund? And if I contributed to it, would you consider meeting this need? And they said, 100%. So I actually was able to get a tax deduction for helping someone. But when it comes to year-end giving, it can be a chance to go, okay, we have this stated goal as a family. We want to be generous. Our budget and our checkbooks say that we're not generous, but there's time for us to change that. And I don't really care if it's year end, but it tends to be a convenient time to do that assessment. I just want everybody listening to at least once a year, at least step back and go, are we actually generous givers in this family? And step two, do the gifts we make actually line up with the vision that we have as a family? So, Stephen, you've done some awesome teaching on how your giving should align with who you are as a family. And I hope that when all these flyers come hurling into your mailbox at the end of the year, you can look at 85% of them and go, this is a great opportunity for people to help others in need or push the kingdom forward or whatever, pay for kids to have food that don't have it, but it's not who we are. So we're saying no to these, but this small slice, whether it's somebody reaching out to us or somebody we found, this is exactly what the Parrot family is put on earth to accomplish. So we're going hard after these things. And I think that's just as true of Abraham's wallet as anything. If you listen to this podcast and you're like, well, I like listening to those guys, but they have nothing to do with our family vision. Well, then don't spend your giving dollars with us. For me, our family vision's all about nurturing well-ordered households. And I'm like, that's why I spend all my time on this podcast here. It's perfectly aligned with our family vision. So we like to give to Abraham's wallet. We also like to give to other opportunities that line up with that vision. And year end is an excellent time to just step back and do that. You said something about organizations. Just to hammer your point home, I'm on the board of a private school. It's the only like K-12 private Christian school in the state of Utah. I think we have a $400,000 goal of fundraising for the year. As of recording this, it's late October, and I think we've raised less than $40,000.
Oh.
So that's how much of giving comes in the last 6 weeks of the year for us, and that's actually totally normal. So I would just say it's not unusual that organizations would just get a ton of the giving that's done happens at year end. And that's something that as a nonprofit, Abraham's Wallet and every other nonprofit kind of has to just navigate.
What's the name of the school? If somebody listening, they go, gosh, I have a heart for the only private Christian school in the state of Utah. What's the name of the school?
It's called Intermountain Christian School.
Okay. You could look up Intermountain Christian School. You could throw them some money. It's coming to mind. You know who needs money in your city? The Crisis Pregnancy Center in your city. You could give them money right now, and I know it would put a smile on God's face. That's what I think.
Yep. The Pregnancy Resource Center of Utah. My wife is the medical director of that organization. And so now we've talked about probably the three out of the four organizations, excluding our local church, that the Parrot family does, I'd say, 90% of our charitable giving to. So
there you go. I would also say check with your states as far as there are some ways that you can give to when you're talking about schools and that kind of stuff in a way that would also turn around and be a credit against state taxes, right? So here in Ohio, each individual person can give to what's called an SGO. And then you can direct that money to go to a private school. It doesn't have to be a private Christian school, but ultimately, if you are attending a private Christian school, SGO, I think you each can give $750 and it turns into a credit on your Ohio return. Now, again, I know this is for Ohio, but I'm assuming other states might have something similar in this respect. And if you're going to pay Ohio $1,500 anyways, might as well give it to the SGO. And then you get it as a credit on your Ohio return. And all you're doing there, it doesn't change anything for you as far as there's no more dollars coming to your pocket. But what you are doing is redirecting those dollars from the state to your school that your children may attend or that you have a heart for or that sort of thing. So again, states have their own little things as well. And it's something to consider.
Yeah, I love that one, Jed. I haven't found any other states that have the same SGO rule is Ohio, but that's on my kind of tick list when I'm going through with a client. If they live in Ohio, it's like, hey, you don't have to do this, but if you can find, unfortunately, Abraham's Wallet does not count as an SGO, but if you can find an organization on this list that you guys believe in, I would rather you give them money than the state of Ohio.
Yeah. Do you pay state of Ohio tax? Great. Is it over $1,500? Awesome. Then if there's somebody on this list, it's kind of a no-brainer. And all you're doing is just redirecting your dollars.
Yeah. Steven, I'll give you one last chance here, but do we accept year-end gifts? I don't know if we've made it clear. At Abraham's Wallet, do we accept year-end giving?
We do. We do. We've thought about it, prayed about it, and we do accept them really any time of the year. But when people are really wanting to give money, we will accept money then, yes.
And why would we ask somebody to give? Give us like a 30-second.
Thank you.
What does the money that's given to Abraham's Wallet actually do?
Number one, it pays for this, what's happening right now. So our producer that makes everything happen, that person gets paid American dollars to do that. Anything that we do that requires, for instance, another cameraman, that person gets paid. You and I have started doing these events out and about into the world. Those things cost money. We've seen wonderful fruit from the conference that we did in California to the guys' outing that we did in Lexington. There's going to be more of that coming in 2025 if there's the money to do it. So we really believe in those things. I even think of the kind of guides that we publish for families, whether it's the Financial Transparency Group Guide, our summit guides that we do, our video series that we've done. Those all take money to happen. We've got a lot of great dreams about how to help families become biblical bosses in the way that they lead their families toward the Lord. We want to help these things more and more. And the more that people are voting, like, we believe in you, we want you to go do it. It not only gives us the resources, honestly, it gives us kind of the confidence to feel that we're sent apostles, if you will, to go do those things. I'm not kidding in saying that when people give us $10 a month, it makes me think, you know what? I don't really care how much they gave. I have a list of families that are saying, go get them, boys. And it buoys me.
Yeah.
So anyways, that there's your 30 seconds.
And Steven, I don't know if you were trying to just be humble there or what.
No.
You also put a ton of time into this podcast. And one of the big things that we did in 2024 is we said, so Abraham's Wallet has a board of directors. We thought the day that we take a dollar from anybody other than Steven and I, we wanted to have oversight from other people. So there are a group of people
True.
That see every dollar that comes and goes from this organization, and they get approval or they can throw the brakes on anything that we think we should spend that money on. One thing is we made a concerted decision that Steven was going to start spending a whole lot more time on this podcast and everything Abraham's Wallet. And so he gets a salary. Right now, that salary is less than a car payment per month. It is not what I would consider a living wage at all. It's not a part-time job. This is like lemonade stand money at the moment. So that's something too that I don't want to be ashamed at all, that we think that labor is worth some wage, and that's something that we have as a goal as an organization, is to allow Steven to keep investing really a lot of his time in Abraham's Wallet and making all this cool stuff happen. So,
well, thank you, Mark.
There you go. That's the end of Abraham's Wallet pitch. So if you only came here to be asked for money, I guess you can leave. But now we're going to get into some tax thoughts from the expert that we brought in. And Jed, I asked you before we started this episode if you would mind kind of running us through a few year-end tips. I always get people, you know, maybe they just have a W-2 job, one income family, one paycheck, and they're going, is there anything I can do to save on taxes? What's changed? What's coming next? You know, by the time we air this episode, we have a new president. And so, assuming that the Civil War hasn't begun, you know, we bless that president, whoever they are, and they're going to bring some changes with them too. We don't know what those are yet, but I would love for you to just run us through maybe a little bit of checklist for that employee, a little bit of checklist if you're a business owner, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, let's start with the W-2, right? So whether it's, you know, one W-2 or two W-2s, maybe a couple kids, own a home. You don't own your own business. You don't have a side hustle that is, you know, generating things. It's just, hey, you're working for a company that's paying you a W-2, and they have withholding and all that kind of stuff. And so, you know, the amount that you can do there, or the tools that you have in your toolbox, you have some. They're a little bit more limited, but you do have some. And so one of the biggest things is to consider, am I going to take the standard deduction, or am I going to be itemizing this year? And so briefly, what that means is everybody gets the standard deduction. So currently, the standard deduction is $29,200 for married filing joint and $14,600 for individuals. Okay. And so if all of your itemized deductions don't add up over that, then you get to take the standard deduction, right? And so what are some of those things that are itemized deductions? One would be mortgage interest. One would be real estate taxes and state and local taxes. However, that's currently capped at $10,000. Okay. There is some instances where medical expenses can come into play. I'm going to put that on the side, because the truth is, if you hit those goals, you've got other things that we need to pray about, because those are definitely going to be kind of large. So let's just put that aside for a second. Because truthfully, if you've got medical expenses, hopefully you have an HSA that you're utilizing. So, you know, if you think about a married couple, if I take $29,000 and I take off $10,000 for my state and local taxes and my real estate taxes, and another, let's just say, you know, let's say $9,000 in mortgage interest, right? Now I'm left with a hurdle of about $10,000 there, right? Or $19,000. So really, the only other thing that's going to get you over that hurdle is what we've already talked about, charitable contributions, right? So if you're constantly giving $10,000 a year in charity, you're constantly missing that hurdle, right? You're underneath of it. Every single year, you're underneath that hurdle, and that standard deduction keeps going up. So I say that to say, this is where the idea of bundling comes into play. We would want to bundle your giving all in one year, maybe multiple years worth of giving, like $30,000, which is three different years, right? If we can facilitate that and give it in one year, then in that year, I'm going to get over the hurdle, right? And then in the other years, I'm going to go back to taking the standard deduction, but I'm still giving the same amount, okay? So again, this is where the idea of if maybe you've had a great year, maybe you're in sales and have had a good year, gotten some big bonuses, have some extra cash at the end of the year, and you want to go ahead and pre-give multiple years worth in a year to get up over that hurdle. Or maybe, again, maybe you've come into some money or any of these things. If you've got appreciated stock, again, we've talked about it, right? These are ways that you can do that. And even if you were like, you know, hey, Jed, I'd love to go ahead and pre-give, but I don't want to necessarily, I don't know if I want to give it all to one or a couple of these organizations. I'd like to be able to take my time. That's kind of where the donor advised fund comes from that you were talking about, Mark, is it's like, okay, well, I can donate this money into a donor advised, take the benefit now, and then I can dole it out over the next 3 years, right? To continue to do that. Or if other opportunities come up, I want to change my giving, you can do that. So again, that's really a big piece, is the idea of, am I close to that? Am I close to that standard deduction versus itemized deduction? And if so, do I need to bundle things to get that benefit for 1 year of something that I'm already going to plan on doing? Okay. So that's a big thing. And the other thing you should probably do is review your benefits. And I know that that isn't directly connected to tax planning, but it kind of is. For instance, every year they up the HSA dollar amount. Are you maxing that out if you have one, if you're available to do that? Have you gone into your benefits and changed that for 2025 to make sure that you're maxing that out through your employer, right? They up the retirement amount. They, we had a baby and we need to pay for daycare. Does your employer offer dependent care FSA that you can put money in there tax-free and utilize it to pay for childcare? Again, any of those kind of life choices, you need to review your benefits to see if some of those things come into play, because they can affect tax. So some of that might affect 2024, but more of it's probably going to be looking at 2025 and making sure you're setting yourself up for maximum success coming into the next year. And then the third thing I would say is check your state credits. We already kind of talked about the SGO in Ohio. Every state has different credits. Just go onto their website. The information is out there. Every state is different. I am fortunate enough that I have software and technology that will give me all the states and all the different credits and that sort of thing. But for you, just go to your and just type in individual credits. And that would then be able to bring up, and it, you can just read them by their names and probably figure out, like, you know what? That military one probably doesn't deal with me because I'm not in the military. However, that homeschool one that's going to give me a $50 credit if I just provide a receipt to say that I spent stuff on homeschool expenses here in Ohio, that one I can do. Let me go find that receipt, and I'm going to have that ready to go when I file my taxes. And again, would you, if you passed $50 on the ground, would you pick it up? Yes. So this is an easy thing to do. So again, don't get so focused on the on federal credits. I think it's a great opportunity to just check state credits as well. And $50 here, $100 there, those could be good things. So I think that's kind of the top three things I would say for individuals with, you know, W-2 job, normal pay, that sort of thing.
Going back to that first tip of bundling, some states, you might not have $10,000 of state and local tax. But they'll let you, for example, in Texas, I know you can pay your real estate tax for the previous year in January and for the following year in December. You have some optionality. So you get your bill early enough and have a long enough time until the due date. You can choose which year you pay in. So if you're bundling, you might also bundle some real estate taxes to make sure you get up to that $10,000 deductible limit. And, you know, those of us in the financial world are also praying that that limit maybe gets erased someday and we go back to the olden days where you can deduct all the state and local taxes that you want. So again, going back to the election, maybe that happens, maybe not. Now, you said that there's a tool bag and it's a small, maybe it's like a tool purse for the W-2 employee. They've got a screwdriver. It's like, here we go.
Oh.
It's like one of these. I got Father's Day. It's a little toolkit that just sits next to my desk. This is not what I pull out when I'm putting my suka up. This is just for like, oh, your sunglasses broke. Maybe there's a tiny screwdriver in there. Now, the big contractor's tool bag, that comes out when we're talking about a business owner, right?
Yeah, there's a lot more that we can do there, right? And so, you know, certainly just like we could probably go very quickly through that tool bag and name all of the tools. And it would take me a long time to go through a larger toolbox or even a garage with full of tools to talk about all the different tools that are there and their specific uses, right? So we're not going to be able to do all of that. So we're going to talk more high level. So let's talk about the three things I would say to small business owners, right? One is you have to decide whether you want to accelerate expenses and delay income, or if you want to accelerate income and delay expenses. Now, obviously, those two things are the exact opposites, but it depends on what you believe. So again, we are currently post-election, okay? And so if you believe that taxes are going to go up in the future, right, you typically want to accelerate income into the current year to have it taxed at a lower rate, and you want to delay expenses because you want to take that expense at a higher tax rate.
Can I interject?
Please.
This is the difference in a good CPA who actually thinks about tax planning and a robot that you hand forms to and they fill out your tax return.
The strategist.
The robot gets a good pat on the head if they can say, look, I found $200 of tax savings for you this year.
I paid for myself.
A good tax planner might tell you, we're going to pay a whole lot more taxes right now. I'm sorry, but I'm going to save you a six-figure amount over the next decade. And that's why I brought Jed here, because he's a good CPA, not a robot.
Well, I appreciate that.
You're here.
Continue.
And again, to your point, it's like, we're not talking about, am I straddling a bracket? Like, hey, if I accelerate this income, am I going to move up brackets? Like, that's a whole different conversation. That's a very specific conversation for you, right? And so, But again, that's where you have to look at. But again, we're post-election, if you believe that taxes are going to relatively stay the same over the next few years, or even potentially go down, I say tongue in cheek, then you would want to accelerate expenses and you would like to delay income. Okay. And what I mean by accelerating expenses and delaying income, I do not mean writing checks and putting them in your desk drawer and not sending them out until January, or just, you know, getting checks in and not depositing them into your checking account until January, or, you know, until January. That's not what I'm talking about. You actually have to, you know, do a little bit of planning and say, okay, I'm going to get rid of this money if I'm going to accelerate. And then, you know, you just kind of don't send that email in December saying, hey, by the way, you owe me this money. That email would be scheduled on January 2nd as a reminder to pay. And so again, that's kind of how you can manipulate that. And so typically what I do is I look at it and say, hey, listen, are there things that I'm going to do in the first quarter, right? The idea of accelerating expenses. Are there things that I'm going to do in first quarter that I can do now? And if the answer is yes, I'm doing it, right? I've obviously in the tax world. So one of the things is we spend a lot of money here at the end of the year to renew software, to renew different tech stacks and that kind of stuff. And I pay for it up front because I have the cash now. I want to take the deduction now. And then I know that I'm going to utilize it January, February, March, April. Like that's going to happen. But usually that also helps with personally helps with my cash flow, right? And so so that's one thing to think about. Again, if you were going to spend it anyways, pay your rent early, right? If you have rent that's due, it's usually due January 1st, pay in December 31st, right? Now, do they have to cash it on December 31st? They do not. It just got to be out of your account. That's the idea, right? Just get that sucker out, right? Bill pay is a beautiful thing. Pay it on 12/31. Great. It's going to get there on time and you still get to take the deduction. Hallelujah.
Sweet.
Or put it on a credit card, right? And so, get them points. And so, run that credit card. And if you pay it, even though you don't pay the credit card itself until later, you can still take the deduction of when you create the liability. It's kind of how that works. So again, you have to decide for yourself, do I believe the taxes are going to go up or down, or do I think that they're going to stay the same? And then act accordingly, either to accelerate expense and delay income or to accelerate income and delay expenses. One of the other things to do here between now and year end is get your records in order. Okay. Now, again, this isn't necessarily a tax savings tip, but it is more of an organizational thing that you should start thinking about because the more you can do now, the more you can plan. All right. And so that means get your books reconciled. That means get your W-9s for your contractors, right? So if you pay a contractor for services, you have to issue them a 1099 at the beginning of the year. And in order to do that, you should have them fill out a W-9 form. Okay. So can't tell you how many times we talk to people in January and we're like, hey, do you have your W-9s? They're like, no, I never got it for the person. I'm like, okay, did you give them the money? They're like, yeah, I paid them. Like, that's the bad move, right? You need to get the W-9 first, then you write them a check. And then they're scrambling because of this due date. Okay. The other thing is you should have a mileage log. Most businesses usually drive in some way, right? They utilize a vehicle in some way, whether the business owner, the business doesn't own it, or the mileage method or the actual method, doesn't matter. Either way, you have to track your miles. If you don't have a mileage log, this is a great time to set that habit, see what your driving is between now and the end of the year, and then you can kind of back into maybe what you think the year is, but to create that habit. I personally use a software called MileIQ, and it tracks me everywhere I go. That freaks some people out. I don't have any issue with it. And I can swipe left or right saying it's business and personal. Also, I can swipe when it's a charitable mileage. While they only give me 10 cents per mile, when I'm driving, a half an hour to my church that's a little bit north of us and I'm playing on the worship team, that's a charitable contribution.
Wow.
I'm taking that sucker. Right. And so, again, if I'm already going to be itemizing, it's something I'm already doing. And this MileIQ will track me and I can say, OK, oh, yeah, there I was for worship practice and I was for these things and it all adds up. Right. And so again, MileIQ, it's a great thing. I'm a big fan of it. There's a number of them out there. This one does cost money. But if you're a business owner, tax deduction. And so it's a great thing to do. So get your records in order. Start that process now. Create that habit now. OK,
good hack.
Third thing I would say for self-employed would be invest in the future, right? And what I mean by that is either place assets in service this year, buy them this year and place them in service. So if I need a piece of equipment, if I need, a big piece of asset, I want to put it into play now so I can potentially take accelerated depreciation, right? So I'm investing, hey, if I had worked with a lot of medical professionals, right? If I had a new x-ray machine, I would be able to next year increase my gross receipts, but the procedures I could do by X percent. Okay, great. I'm going to invest that money now, take the deduction now as accelerated depreciation, and then be able to utilize it for next year because I would want to do it anyways. And then if it's not placing assets in service, then maybe it is a retirement plan. Maybe it's a solo K or something like that, where it's like, hey, again, business is doing well. This makes sense. I want to be able to provide benefit for my employees. Or if it's just yourself, hey, great. I want to be able to start putting money away for retirement in a tax efficient way. Again, whether that makes sense for you or not, we can have the conversation of Roth versus traditional and all that kind of stuff. But it's another way to invest in the future and putting money away. So those would be the three large things that I would say that self-employed people should do every single year around this time is look at, hey, do I need to accelerate some expenses? Need to get my records in order? And how much am I willing to invest into the future, whether placing assets in service or potentially putting money away in retirement?
So that's kind of the business owner. You just gave us the tip of the screwdriver when it comes to the toolbox available. I am personally waiting for the Mileage IQ. I heard they're developing a vaccine that you just inject and then it tracks not only where you drive, but everything about you.
Waiting for that. I believe Elon is coming out with that soon.
Scary.
You talked now about employees. You talked about business owners. But here at Abraham's Wallet, we're kind of into this idea of multi-generational wealth. And part of multi-generational wealth is eventually you get to the point where, you know, Lord willing, you have retired and you might even have some financial accounts that are generating forced income. They're going to make me take money out of my retirement accounts. And is there anything I can do if that's me or maybe that's my parents even, to minimize taxes? Or is it just you get what you get at that point?
Yeah, I think with some planning that there's a couple of things that you can do to help with smoothing out the taxes, right? And that's really the goal, I think, in retirement is if I can create my income to be steady, whether that's because I'm forced to keep it steady or I can manipulate it to keep it steady, that's going to keep my taxes from jumping up really, really high or getting down too low. Because the idea of, well, I didn't pay any tax. Well, that just means that we kind of left that standard deduction go to waste because that doesn't roll over. It's not like any unused standard deduction from one year rolls over to the next year, right? And so I kind of look at people's information and say, hey, if I can keep you at, you know, let's just, you know, based on their information, right? 22% tax bracket. If I can keep them in that 22% tax bracket for the rest of their life, I'm a happy camper. Okay, well then that means that if their planned income is only going to be in the 12, I've got a gap there that I can utilize. And part of how you can utilize that is if I have traditional IRAs or 401ks, I could convert some of that money to a Roth IRA. I get it taxed now when I want it taxed, right? I fill up the rest of the 12% tax bracket. I fill up the 22% tax bracket and I'm good. We pay the tax now. And then that money can stay growing for future and all that kind of stuff for generational wealth, but it can do it in a way that now is tax-free, right? And so that's huge, right? I think that's huge. It's an opportunity. I think people just think, hey, I don't really need to do anything here. And I still think in those years where your maybe income is down a little bit because you're now transitioning, it's an opportunity to make some moves to kind of help smooth it out because eventually the IRS is going to make you take that money out eventually, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And so I want to do it when I want to have control over it of when I take it out. And that's how we can do that with a Roth conversion, right?
Yeah, it's true. And I talk to people all the time who are high earners. So they're up in a high tax bracket and they're thinking, well, I just don't trust the government. So I want to do every dollar I can in Roth right now. And that's fine if that's what you're going for. But a lot of times those same people, they kind of look down the cash flow projection and go, well, at the amount I'm earning and how I save and diligently invest, I don't need to be earning this much for that long. And I might have a 15-year period where my taxable income is very low. And I always tell them, we could just do the conversions later at a much lower rate. This listener, forgive me if you're going to shake your head at this little tip, because I know a lot of you know this, but one of the most common questions I get around tax time is, Mark, I'm really worried because we made more than we thought, and I'm worried I'm going to tip us into the next tax bracket. And then all my money is going to be taxed at 30% instead of 24%. And I just want to remind you that we have a progressive tax code in this country, which means you are taxed zero on the first chunk of income. And then you're taxed at 10% on the next chunk and 12. And if you go $1 over the tax bracket, you are taxed at the higher tax rate, but only on that $1. So be a little less afraid of kind of the idea that you'll trip a tax bracket. It's something I hear all the time. And if that's ever been a worry of yours, I just release you to stop worrying and consider the lilies they're taken care of.
And make as much money as you can and just, just make money.
Okay. We could talk all day. I have one last question for you, Jed, because it's another common one. And I think it's right down the middle for the people listening to this podcast is, when is it time to bring in a tax professional and what should I be thinking about them doing? You know, I just praised the fact that you do tax planning and a lot of deep dive work, but you know, you charge for your time. You kind of threw out some numbers.
I have been known. I have been known to charge for my time. I have people at home that depend on that. So
yes. And you, it wouldn't make sense for somebody who's just getting started to hire somebody like you and the level of work you offer. They might be saying, well, do I go to do TurboTax or do I hire a person at H&R Block or do I hire the guy that works at my church that does tax returns on the side? And then there's every step between there and the full service. I'm going to hire a firm to do all my accounting and audit and bookkeeping, etc. So when should people be looking to engage with a professional? And if they're thinking about doing that, how do you even know who's half decent at this job?
All right. Well, those are kind of two different questions. So as far as when, right, I think that, so I'm a movie person. And the thing that comes to my mind when you ask that is like, hey, you know, when is the time to go to a pro or maybe go with a DIY this is not going to be a normal movie for probably this podcast, but The Notebook. You have Ryan Gosling looking at Rachel McAdams and he goes, what do you want? And he's staring at her, right? And he's like, what do you want? This is what I think. So the question, what do you want? What are you looking for when you're wanting to do this, right? And what I mean by that is that, you know, hey, listen, if you just want to check a box and do compliance, if your situation is dialed in, either because you have intentionally done it or, you know, you're just early on in the journey and you don't, maybe you've got less of a toolbox than what Mark has, right? In his little thing there, right? Maybe you just have a tool, right? So you probably can, you could use a software. The software out there is powerful, right? They can ask you the right questions and it's going to be pretty straightforward because you're not going to make a lot of moves. You're not going to be able to make a lot of moves, right? There's not a lot of trips, you know, things trip you up. We were talking about the gamification, right? Of the idea of the tax code. Well, you're just like on level one in Mario Brothers, right? You just need to jump over some mushroom people, bonk a couple guys and hit the flag at the end, right? So it can be very, very straightforward, right? And there's a lot of tools out there with TurboTax or TaxAct or TaxSlayer. I don't know what, you know, they're out there and they can do the job. I have clients that come to me and they're like, Jed, do you do my kids' return? I'm like, your kids' return, there's no federal withholding. They're not going to get any money back. They're maybe going to get a little bit of money back from Ohio, right? Do you really want to pay me $250 to do this? Or do you want to take the opportunity to teach your child the tax system? You know what my daughter did this year? She got on my tax software and did her own taxes for her job at Zoom BZ Bay. Made her do it herself because I'm like, I need you to understand, not just like, this is how this works, right? And I should have videoed it, to be honest with you, because it was hilarious. She's like, what do you mean this? And what do you mean? It was great. It was classic. So I say all that to say it's a great learning opportunity. And so if you've never done it and you're in this simplistic current situation, yeah, you should be able to do it. It won't be that bad, right? So now, at the same time, I am an individual who does not enjoy yard work on any level, okay? I don't like to, mow the grass, don't like to rake leaves, don't like to do any of those things. And we can talk about my traumatic, childhood about why, but that's for another podcast. but ultimately, I like to have a nice lawn, however. And so at that point in time, is it an easy thing? Yes, it is. Do I enjoy doing it? I do not enjoy doing it. Okay. So it's either my time or my money in that instance, right? I'm either going to have to take my time to go do it because I want a nice lawn, or I'm going to have to pay somebody to do it. And that's fine. But I am not buying some big John Deere tractor to ride around my little plot of land in Dublin, Ohio, right? To do said thing. So again, It's all about what do you want out of it. Now, if you are wanting somebody to be able to look at your situation and give you advice because you don't have anybody currently, right? Hopefully you're utilizing this podcast to help you with some of these things, okay? But let's say this is your first time here and you've never talked to somebody before and you want to talk to somebody about your individual thing, then that could make sense to go to a professional, okay? But again, they should be asking you questions. I would not personally, if you're going to look between going to a professional and doing it on your own, and all you're going to do with the professional is give them the data, they're going to put it in some sort of software, they're going to turn around and give you something to sign, and that's it, I would say that you probably could do it yourself, okay? If this individual is asking you questions and did you do this and what about this and you should think about this for next year and that kind of stuff, there's value to that advice. And if that's what you want, if you want somebody that's going to not just give you compliance, but also give you advice about what you should do for this year, but also in the future, there are those people, even at a simplistic level, right? Hey, by the way, on the first level of Super Mario Brothers, if you go down this pipe, you can go down there and get some extra coins and then come up to the end faster, right? That's advice, all right? And so my point is there's value to that. There's value to that. And so you're going to pay a little bit more, right? Okay. If you're a small business owner that has that your business is either you want it to be your full-time thing or it is your full-time thing, I don't see how you don't do it with a professional. Again, I just think that you typically have so much on your plate between running the business and keeping the books. And if you're married, you know, being a good spouse and raising children and just all this stuff that to keep up with that, I couldn't imagine it.
Yeah. And I run into that all the time with folks who I'll encourage them to get some help on the tax side. Hey, I think you missed 6 or 7 pretty substantial credits. Yeah, but I only paid $140 for this software. And I'm thinking,
you dummy.
Let's be thoughtful here. Or, yeah, you messed something up and it's actually not going to cost you any money, but it is going to cost you 8 hours trying to get through to the IRS.
Oh, Lord. Yes.
Those are all good advice, Jed. We just got into the toolbox. I was looking here at what's in my little toolbox.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it's needle nose pliers, which are always, those
you
are
need
always
those nice. In your life. You have to have needle nose pliers.
But curiously, socket wrench. If you can only have a screwdriver with a variety of attachments, needle nose pliers, they only have room for one more thing and they chose socket wrenches. I thought that was, you know, if you're going to work on very tiny engines, I guess that's what you would need. But for most people, I would have maybe put, a little wrench in there.
An adjustable wrench. That's what I would have thought.
Yeah.
So, but it feels like that's built for maybe IKEA right there. That's the IKEA's man.
Yeah. I don't know where this came from, but this is right here live on Abraham's Wallet. That's the first time I've ever opened that tiny toolkit.
I think it's a comment on you that someone thought these are the kind of tools that you would need in your life. Is a teeny tiny little socket wrench. That seems like
not a hammer. Right? He's not a hammer guy. That there's no hammer there.
I just want to put in a note here that I think part of a dad's job is putting that team together around your life, whether it is the lawn care guy or the electrician you trust or the HVAC guy, or the tax prep people, or your financial advisor, just putting that team together. This is why we put our heads together with other great family leaders around us. Who do you use for home repair? Who do you use for rodent control, et cetera? Whatever the deal is we're trying to put together a team that makes our family successful. And having a professional help you with taxes is the most reasonable kind of idea in the world.
There are a lot of people out there that can do this. And again, different people work for different people, right? Different personalities and that kind of stuff. And so you should, if you are looking at potentially bringing on a professional into this, you have to do as much due diligence and much conversation, as much interviewing as if you are going to let somebody come and live in your house.
Right.
That's the way I'm going to say it. Because they are. They're going to be living in your financial house and they're going to be speaking into that. And so, you want to make sure that there are people that you can trust that are knowledgeable and are shrewd, but if it's too good to be true, it's probably too good to be true. I've had to have some of those conversations that it's like, hey, this person told me they do this. And I'm like, yeah, that's illegal. So I'm happy to show you my research to show you why it is. And if you want to open yourself up for that exposure, that's awesome. That's not me. Yeah. Right. So again, it's comparing yourself to other people, especially when it comes to tax and that kind of stuff, is a dangerous, dangerous game because every person's situation is different. Right. And so just, ask questions. If you hear something that's interesting, great. But again, a lot of things that we said may have sparked something, but it may not make sense for you. And this is where having a professional take a look at your specific situation makes sense.
Well, Jed, thanks for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
I want to just close this out. If you're listening, just to recap really quickly, it is year-end giving time. And for most of you, giving is like lever. It's the giant emergency lever in the warehouse that you can pull when it comes to deciding how much taxes you're going to pay this
year. It's the needle nose plier in your toolbox.
It's taking up most of the space in your tiny toolkit. And so just a reminder, that's something that we exist because of generosity from the people that listen to this podcast. Keep us in mind. You can go to abrahamswallet.com/donate. There's links in the show notes to that. If you're listening to this and there's opportunities and you're kind of confused out there, please don't feel like it's admitting failure to go out and find professional help in something that you either don't want to do or don't have the skill set to do. Nothing wrong with that. And I hope that this episode has given you what you need to feel like you've got a grip on how to move forward when it comes to this relatively confusing topic of tax. So get after it. We bless you to run your homes and your dough like a biblical boss as you close out 2024.